What's up, No Nation? It's the guys from Plant the Spear here to preview a big one. This is Florida Hate Week. Florida State versus Florida. Noles versus the Gators. The Sunshine Showdown, as they call it. Maybe not the most intimidating name, but either way, it's going down. Not like good old-fashioned hate or something like, you know, that's some right. of the other rivalries, but it's going down this Saturday in the dump of the swamp.
That's right.
7 o'clock p.m. sold out. You know it's going to be crazy down there. So Florida State is going to look to have to handle their business in front of a crazy crowd. Hopefully they can take it out early. But we're talking about 11-0, number five, Florida State, against 5-6 Florida. Florida State's on a 17-game win streak right now, looking to finish the regular season 12-0. Florida, on the other hand, has lost four straight. So it feels like Florida State should win this game. On paper, Florida State should win this game. There's two backup quarterbacks. It's a rivalry game. It's on the road, so you never know what's going to happen. But we're excited to be with you guys to talk about this one. Michael, thank you so much for joining me. How are you today, my friend?
I'm good. I'm coming to you from the Bluegrass State, Kentucky, down visiting family. But, you know, we're going to make time to talk about this old-fashioned, good old Noles versus the Turds.
Yep, and I'm rocking my, for those of you watching on YouTube, I got my Stomp the Chomp shirt on Blue Florida badge. So, like, you know, I love this game. It's so much fun. I still admit that I am more of I hate Miami a little bit more than Florida, but every time you go to play Florida and you start interacting with that fan base, you remember how much you don't like them either. So it's always fun. But, you know, speaking of being out of town and visiting, Michael, it is the day before Thanksgiving. So a lot That's of you right. guys will probably be watching this on Thanksgiving. So obviously happy Thanksgiving to you guys. This is one of my favorite holidays because I just like to eat. You know, I don't know about you, Michael. I'm more of a sides guy. I'm coming in and I'm looking for some mac and cheese or some greens or something. And then I'm hitting the dessert table. Now, I like some turkey, but I'm a dark meat guy and I like the fried turkey. And so, like, there's only two of us for Thanksgiving this year at my house. So I actually went rogue and bought a steak. we're going to do a tomahawk ribeye instead. But
let's go.
Yeah, Michael. So where are you heading when you come up to the table? Are you like are you the turkey guy? Are you going for the sides, or are you just going straight to the sweet table?
Listen, I'm a turkey guy. You know, a few years ago, my wife and I discovered grilled turkey. I don't know if you've ever had grilled turkey, like on the grill. It's like the best ever. But coming down to Kentucky, my family. My wife's family, they do the original turkey, you know, with all the stuff on it. So we'll eat that. So really the first thing I go to is where's the cranberry, and not like the homemade cranberry. Nah, I don't want none of that. I want the cranberry from the can that you bought in the store that's been in the back of the shelf since 1947. Straight out of the can. It's Jell-O. It's survived several atomic bombings. That's the cranberry I want. And I'll put that with the turkey.
That's funny because my wife's like, it's not Thanksgiving without cranberry. Right. And I'm like, all right, fine. But I'm calling dibs on the leg. As soon as I walk in the house, like, y'all got to save me a leg or a wing. That's what I'm going for.
That's
Yeah, man. So I'm just excited. Like, this is the best week of the year. Like, you get Thanksgiving, you get time with family, you get time with, you know, with football, NFL plays that day. There's actually, I think the Egg Bowl goes on tomorrow night. Oh, yeah,
Mississippi and Ole Miss. Yeah, Ole Miss. That's right.
So we got some college football to watch as well. And then it's rivalry week. Like last week, unfortunately, you know, it's usually one of the most boring weeks of the year. It's SEC Cupcake Week. You know, we had North Alabama, but rivalry week is the best week, in my opinion, of college football. So there's a lot of games to be excited about. And this is one of them. So,
yes,
when we talk about this, Florida State is favored by just under one score. Last I checked, it was 6.5-point favorite. Yep. Over under at 50.5. Like we said, it's sold out. And you know what's interesting to me, Michael, when you talk about this one, there's a lot of mixed kind of feelings on this one. When you look around the country in the national picture, obviously we feel good. I told you earlier that, and you had mentioned this on the last show, man, I got this weird feeling in my gut that like Florida State is just going to circle the wagons with what happened to Jordan. They're going to rally around Tate. I went back and watched the Louisville game from last year because I was like, let me refresh on Tate against a Power 5 defense. You know, the start was a little rough. We'll touch on that later. But then like he was dropping some dimes, man. So I feel like Florida State can get the job done. But then, you know, you see one of the talking heads or whatever you want to call him. And I don't think he's a bad guy at all. But Josh Pate from whatever network he's from, 247, I think it was, he actually picked Florida to win this game.
Yeah, he did.
And one of the reasons he said that was he cited that Florida was good at home. And that would be the difference, us having to go into the swamp. And, you know, I this is something that I took notes on in for the show. Looking at UF is 4-1 at home. And I was like, OK, that might be a little bit of a problem. Right. But then you start looking at. Yeah, but let's pump the brakes on that a little bit. So when you start looking into things here, their home wins are against teams with a combined record of 16-38. They've only beat one team with a winning record at home, and that was Tennessee, who's been blown out twice now in the last 2 weeks. And they've only beat two Power Five teams at home, and one of those was Vandy. So, I mean, it's not hard to be good at home when you don't play anybody at home. You're talking about an 0-10 McNeese State FCS program, a 3-8 Charlotte team that they only scored one touchdown, I think like five field goals against. So I get it. It's sold out. It's at night. It's in the swamp. But that home record is a lot of fluff to me. So, man, what do you make of like having to go into the swamp and just some overall thoughts and your gut feeling on this game?
Well, I mean, let's just talk about going in the swamp. Regardless of how terrible Florida is, the swamp is it's a hard place to win. It's a hard place to play in. It's always going to be sold out. I mean, they're going to be drunk off their butts. They're going to be, you know, singing Sweet Home Alabama or Sweet Home Georgia, whatever they sing there. They're going to be in their jorts.
Don't back down or something like that.
Yeah, back down and go Gators and just whateverness. And I mean, there is going to be packed. Especially because Florida State is coming in undefeated, 11-0, and Florida's having a terrible season. They're fighting for bowl eligibility. So they're looking at this is their Super Bowl. This is their national championship game this season. They want to ruin Florida State's season. They're going to be there. They're going to be sold out, regardless of all those things. Yep. I'm telling you. I've told you this. I think I told you this in the What Now show that we did on YouTube. I told you this through a text message. I just believe it. Florida State's going to go in there and Florida State's going to win. And not just win, Jesse. Florida State is going to dog walk Florida. They're going to dog walk Florida. It's going to be a blowout. I imagine that at the end of the day, when the clock hits zero, Florida State fans are going to be beside themselves because they're going to be like, we did not know we had this in a backup quarterback. We did not know this team could play at this level. Or they're going to be like, we've been waiting for the team to play at this level all season to remind us of LSU all over again. I really believe that Florida State's going to go in there. It might be shaky for the first quarter. I'm not going to deny that. Right. Might be shaky. Right. But by the end of that game, Florida State will win and win big. You'll see my prediction at the end of this.
I hope so, man. I really hope you are right, because it would be nothing sweeter than to, you know, in a game where, like you said, I think that Florida has this little weird sense of confidence now that Jordan's out. They think they can do some things. It's at home. It's at night. It's sold out. But I also think that when you talk about being sold out, now, granted, Tate did not play in this game because it was tight and was going into overtime, but this team's already been to Clemson. So, that is a 90,000-plus stadium, same size as the Swamp. It was sold out. It was loud. So they've been in that environment. This is not like where we talked about a lot of the ACC opponents coming into Doak, where this is their first time in that environment. Florida State is used to that really loud crowd. So I don't think that's going to rattle them so much. But, yeah, man, I do agree with you. Like, if you can take the crowd out of it early and get Tate settled in, I think – you know, you could surprise some people. I think that sometimes through unfortunate set of circumstances, if they play with the fire that they played in the back half of the North Alabama game, and I know it's North Alabama, I get it, but like, you're already juiced up over rivalry. Now, of course, in this game, controlling your emotions is going to be huge. But I think if they play with that level of fire against this Florida team, I think anything's possible. I really do, because I think Florida is just – they're dealing with a backup quarterback too, who has less experience than Tate. So we don't know what to expect really from him either. And I like what you have in your backup, probably more proven than what they have. And Florida State's just a better team. It's just, can you control your emotions? Can you go in there and execute the plays? And I think that, you know, I think Florida State has a really good chance in this one.
Well, it's like, kind of like you said, like, I mean, if you go back to that, what was it, 2021 game, Florida State was fighting for bowl eligibility. Florida was already bowl eligible. Florida State was coming in. Everybody thought on paper, like, wait, this Florida State team actually could take Florida. Like, there were a lot of predictions out there where Florida State was going to win the game, because on paper, Florida State actually had, in some ways, the better team. Not maybe the better skill sets, but the better team. And Florida State had a chance, but what happened? They let the emotions get to them. They got penalized for personal fouls all day. I mean, it was just absolutely ridiculous. Even Mike Norvell said after that game, he said, and then even today in his post-practice interviews, he had talked about how they just let their emotions get the best of them in that game. That's what cost them the game, was their emotions. And so he talked about it today, like how we have been harping on, like, yes, he wants them to play with deep passion and deep emotions, but emotions under control, emotions under control. I always call it strength under control. You got the fire. Now channel that fire to produce your best output. If they do that, Jesse, there's nothing, there's nothing on this Gator team that scares me that says that they can't win. They can't walk into the swamp and dominate.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think it's, like you said, it's using that passion and that energy in a controlled way, because you have to understand that, like you said, this is Florida Super Bowl. This is what they are playing for, to spoil your season. That's about all. Because even if they, you know, even if they say they win and they go to a bowl, I mean, it's probably gonna be like the tax slay or something like that. So who cares? So you can't take the bait. You cannot let them, you know, bait you into throwing a punch or something stupid like that. You got to remain calm in the moment. And you also have to remember that Florida State is playing for a lot more than just beating Florida. Absolutely. Yes, it happens to be a rivalry game. Yes, it happens to be the next game. But your vision has to be farther down the road than just beating Florida.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, man, last year they beat Florida 45-38 in Doak. It was a little bit closer than people expected it to be. But, and you know, the funny thing is I put out a little thing on social media because, you know, I'm taking shots all week at Florida and Miami. Like every time I get a chance, I'm going to. And I put out a little thing where I changed the sign in the swamp to FSU runs this state. And everybody wants to bring up the all-time series record. They do have the series record. That's fine. But people have to understand, too, like Florida has been playing football for four decades longer than FSU. So correct. You had a 40-year head start.
Correct.
You know, if you want to talk about back when they had leather helmets and all that stuff, that's fine. That's great. They won. I think they were like 16-2-1 in the first 19 games. But if you look at the last 50 meetings, Florida State owns the last 10. They're tied in the last 20. FSU owns 30, 40, and 50. So again, when you talk about Florida State being, until expansion, when they added like UCF and all these other little weird teams to Power Five football, about 2 years ago or so, Florida State was, I believe I did the math on this, they were the youngest Power Five team in the country.
Yep.
So still, I mean, you talk about a team that's been playing 40 more years than Florida State and still has the same number of national titles, has a lower winning percentage, has never had a undefeated season. Like Florida State punches way above their weight class when you talk about their simply just their age.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, Florida fans, they can flex the all-time record, but you know, we know who really runs this state and
exactly. Miami. Like when you have to flex the all-time winning record, that just tells you your program is garbage, right? That you have to remind a program that you've had a 40-year head start on. Oh, we have the all-time winning record. Oh, okay. Yeah, that means that in less time we've achieved what you still haven't been able to achieve. And you only got your two, you only had one national title in 96, and you only got your two in literally the early 2000s with Urban Meyer, where we had two national titles in the 90s and we got one in 2013. We had six regular season undefeated seasons. You've had zero. We have more Heisman Trophy winners than you. We have more NFL All-Americans than you. We have more people in an NFL Hall of Fame than you. So if you want to throw out the all-time win record, we can come back at you, and we've done it with 40 years less of experience.
Yeah, when you look at when I went through their history, program history, because someone was like coming at me and they were like, oh, congratulations, you have one good season in the last 20 years or something like that. I'm like, bro, you realize Florida hasn't won anything in 16 years?
You've like been under a rock, bro?
And what was funny about it, too, was like when you look at Florida's 111-year history, they've had about six good years.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's been a century of just mid. And that's pretty much it. And so, I think that program is – a little more entitled. They're a little big for their britches, so to speak, or whatever you want to say. It is what it is, but we're coming into the swamp and we're going to try and close that record a little bit more. So, we'll see. I think the gap is like maybe I think it's what, 10 wins or something like that. I don't know. Yeah. It's probably more than what Florida fans have teeth in their mouth. So, you know, it is what it is. So over there in Jort country. But again, we're always going to take our shots during rivalry week. But so, Michael, let's first talk about some head to head as far as the team goes. So let's bring up some advanced metrics here first. Let's talk about how these teams stack up against each other. So if we're talking about advanced metrics, of course, this is opponent adjusted and pace of play. Your overall team rankings, Florida State comes in at 6th, UF comes in at 45th. Your offense for Florida State is at 12th, UF is 31st. This is the big gap here. Your defense is coming in at 11th. Theirs is at 85th. Wow. Now, here's the thing that did surprise me a little bit. Their special teams is at 3rd, so that might be something to watch in this game.
Yeah. Yep.
But Florida State's is at 16th, so theirs is good, too. We know they're good at blocking kicks. They have some returns. Now, strength of schedule is such a hard thing to find a consistent measurement on because ESPN, like Florida, obviously is not in contention for squats, so they're not listed in any of their list. But so what I did was I looked at how they performed against advanced metric ranked top 50 teams.
That's good. I like that. Yeah.
They are currently 1-5 against those teams, and Florida State is 4-0 against those teams.
Come on now.
When you look at these numbers on paper, it looks like Florida State should dominate this game, but we know games aren't played on paper, but it does make you feel better about some of the things here. So just looking at a couple more advanced metrics here. So your yards per play margin, which is how much more your offense would gain than your defense gives up. Florida State is at plus 1.7, 11th in the country. Florida is 85th in the country. And the numbers don't really matter here. It's just kind of the rankings to see if you're good at this or not. So Florida State comes in at 11th, UF at 85th. When you look at your net success rate, Florida State is 13th, UF is at 28th. When you look at EPA, which is expected points added margin, Florida State is at 8th. Florida is at 57th. Turnover margin, this is going to be a big one to watch.
This is huge.
Florida State is plus 10 in turnover margin, which is something I really wanted to see from this team this year. Tied for 7th in the country. Florida comes in at negative 4 in the turnover margin, which is tied for 100th. So again, Michael, like I said, man, when you talk about just looking at things on paper, obviously, if you throw the records out the window like you would in a rivalry game, 11-0 and 5-6 and all that stuff. But when you just look at the numbers and how these teams have performed, it looks like Florida State should run away with this game. But, of course, you have the wild cards here with the two backup quarterbacks. But we feel good about Tate in this game. Obviously, you got to get him settled in. But, yeah, man, it looks like on paper that you should win this game. But games aren't played on paper.
Games aren't played on paper, and games aren't played in the stats, right? Now, what we do know is that teams will eventually regress to the mean, right? They will regress to what they've been doing all season long. The stats do tell a story, but it's just never the whole story. And what the stats don't factor in is the environment by which you played the game in, the injuries by which who's in and who's out, the coaching acumen, like who's a better coach. And when you look at those things, Florida has the advantage on the environment because it's at their place, right?
Yep.
Florida State actually has the advantage on the injury side because we believe that Tate is obviously better than their quarterback, that their backup quarterback they're going to bring in, Max Brown, who's going to be playing, who's only taken before the Missouri game. He'd only taken 12 throws, and then 18 snaps is all he took in that Missouri game. So, you know, we have a four-year player who's been in Mike Norvell's system for 4 years since the very beginning. He's had to come in to games, play significant snaps. I mean, what you talked about when you watched the Louisville game, he had to come in. Florida State was losing that game, down 7, and he led Florida State back to win that game, obviously coming in a North Alabama game and helping Florida State go on it. Because Florida State was 13 points, 0-13, and he helped Florida State go on a 58-0 run to win that game going away. So and then coaching, let's just be real. You know, I actually liked Billy Napier. He was at Clemson for a little bit. He was at Alabama. He went to Louisiana.
Yep.
He's a good coach. He isn't Mike Norvell. You've seen the coaching blunders. You've seen the clock management issues. You've seen the terrible calls. I think about every other week they have only 10 players on the field during a defensive or a special teams possession that ends up costing them something. I mean, you can see that he's just not a great game management coach. Whereas on the other side, you got Mike Norvell, who has proven over and over again. Yeah, sometimes he makes some calls. You're like, what the heck is going on here? But for the most part, Mike and that staff, they're really good. They're game planning. I mean, you go back to the Miami game when they did the onside kick. they saw something in that game in that would allow them to do that. That's how detailed they are in their preparation. Yep. So you look at those four factors and you say, well, Florida State has three of the four checked on their side. Plus, Florida State has the better athletic team. Florida State has the more put together team. Florida State has the more team camaraderie. Florida State's got more to play for. Florida doesn't. So all those factors, when you add in on top of the stats, should tell you that Florida State should walk out of the swamp with a W on this Saturday.
I do agree with what you say too. I thought Napier would be a pretty good coach when he came into Florida. When you looked at what he did at Louisiana, I thought he would be pretty decent. I thought he was a better hire, maybe like under the radar than Cristobal was. Yeah. I thought, you know, obviously Cristobal may be a better recruiter, but I don't think he's a very good coach. I thought Napier was a pretty good coach. It just seems like, you know, that's a team that won the SEC East a couple years ago before he arrived. So it's not like he took over just a dumpster fire. I know people talked about Mullen's recruiting and all that stuff, and they needed some defense. And defense has been their struggle. Yep. And they're already on their second coordinator, but I do think you have an advantage there. I just think he's not a bad coach. I just think it's kind of almost like a Willie Taggart situation where he was very successful at the Group of Five level, but he might be in over his head at a place like Florida, which is how he earned the nickname Billy Taggart. So
that's right.
You know, we'll see. And then you know, they got the new DC this year, Austin Armstrong, Bobby Hill, who's like Bobby Hill on speed. Yeah. You know, he just talks and talks and doesn't make any sense. So
it makes absolutely no sense. Whatever he says,
I think he's got, you know, I do think, again, I think you have the edge in coaching here. So
yeah,
that'll be something to watch too. But when we just talk about, before we get into offense and defense, let's just kind of refresh our memory here on what Florida has done this season. So we'll breeze through their schedule real quick. Game one, they lost on the road at Utah, 24-11 with a pig farmer at quarterback there for Utah, who ended up being their starter. But yeah, man, they lost that game first to start the season. Then they come home and they beat McNeese State, who is an 0-10 FCS team, 49-7. I didn't even write down any stats for that game. I don't care what you did against an 0-10 FCS team.
Right.
Again, that's not like proving that you're great at home by beating a team like that. Then their best win of the season, 29-16 versus Tennessee, who is now 7-4. Somehow, I don't understand how they're still ranked, but whatever.
SEC bias.
Exactly. But at least Clemson snuck back in. So that's, that
boosts
your resume a little bit there. So, yeah, man, but Tennessee in that game, they did outgain UF. They had 10 penalties and a turnover that kind of cost them there. And Tennessee's been blown out the last 2 weeks in a row. Then they beat Charlotte 22-7 at home. They're 3-8, 5 field goals, only 1 touchdown at home against the 104th ranked defense.
Yes.
It's not a good look.
And that should tell you something. Real quick, that should tell you something, that Charlotte, which is a terrible team, the worst defense, and all you could do was 22 points in that was indicative. I remember seeing that score thinking that's actually going to tell us how they're going to play out the rest of the season. And you've seen it. You've seen how they've done the rest of the season.
And that was with Graham Mertz, who was actually a better quarterback than I gave him credit for.
Yep.
And then you look at the next game. They lost 33-14 at Kentucky, who is 6-5. You know, I mean, Kentucky and Florida are probably, you know, they're pretty even as far as caliber team. But goodness gracious, man, 329 rushing yards.
I mean,
9.1 yards per carry by Kentucky.
Yeah,
ran through them.
Yep.
And so you would hope, again, they got outgained in that game. You would hope that Florida State would be able to get the run game going here, especially with the backup quarterback. When you see what some other teams have done. Then they beat Vandy, which, hey, shout out to them. That turned into a sneaky little rivalry game there with them losing to Vandy last year. But Vandy's 2-9, and you beat them 38-14 at home. Not really impressive there. You put up 38 points, but Vandy has the 117th ranked defense, so you didn't really do a whole lot there. Then you look at they beat South Carolina, who is a dumpster fire this year. They beat them 41-39. It was really close at South Carolina.
But then check this out. But then I don't know if you're about to say this, so sorry but South Carolina, they beat South Carolina by 2 points at home. Then South Carolina goes and beats the team that blew them out, Kentucky. So what does that tell you?
Yeah, it's just crazy, man. And South Carolina had 9 penalties and 2 turnovers in that game that kind of allowed Florida to get in it. Now, Mertz had a really good game in this one, 423 yards and 3 touchdowns. And that's the thing, man, like, their offense has carried that team to the little tiny bit of success that they've had because their defense is atrocious.
Yeah.
Now you don't have them. And so that's, I think, is going to be one of the biggest differences in this game. Of course, we know they lost 43-20 versus UGA in a neutral site game. I'm not going to punish anybody for losing to UGA because everybody loses to Georgia.
Everybody loses to Georgia.
Yep. Right. And so then they lose 39-36 in overtime versus Arkansas, who is 4-7. Arkansas was on a six-game losing streak and had never won a game in the Swamp and goes in there, puts up 481 yards on them and beats Florida in the Swamp. So, yeah, man, it's just that's what I'm when I talk about. It's not the hardest place to play. I know it's sold out. I know it's loud. I know it is a tough place to play. But right. for someone like, you know, a national head to say, I think the advantage in this game is going to be them playing at home.
Yeah.
I mean, you lost to Ark, a 4-1 team at home. You beat a bunch of bad teams. And then the one common opponent that you do have was the LSU game where they lost 52-35. Now, of course, this was in Death Valley. That's always going to be a tough place to play. LSU's 8-3, but man, I mean, like Michael, I feel like if they'd let me play in that game, I probably could have put up some yardage because LSU. I think Brian Kelly might have scored a touchdown in this game. Come Who knows? 701 yards LSU. Jaden Daniels put up. I mean, this is video game. This is like video game on the rookie mode. 606 all-purpose yards and 5 touchdowns, 9.4 yards per carry, 372 pass, 329 run, 9.4 yards a carry. When you think about what Florida State did to that LSU offense, that makes you feel good. You know, they put up 52 points against Florida, and you held them to 17 non-garbage time points.
Yeah, and I've seen recently on X where people are trying to dismiss, well, it was a first game. You know, LSU didn't really know. No, that's a bunch of malarkey.
That was your excuse last year. You don't get to use that excuse this year.
Exactly. Because Florida State also, you know, last year they tried to say, well, Florida State had a game before they play LSU. Well, they both came into the season with no game experience. Yes, they got out to a 17-0 lead or 17-7 lead there, 17-3, whatever it was. But then Florida State put the clamps down. I mean, they literally in all those second half possessions before, I think it was like 6 second half possessions before garbage time, LSU couldn't do nothing. Nothing. Alabama let LSU walk up and down them until Jaden Daniels got hurt. Everybody has not been, no one's been able to stop this LSU offense but Florida State. And LSU literally ran through Florida like they were like Swiss cheese on a dusty day. I mean, it was just like ridiculous. It's a million yards. This is crazy. Yep.
And the thing that I really think stands out about that too is now you talk about where your season, you're now, of course, we want the offense to keep going. Like, obviously, you want the offense to keep putting up 30 points and all that stuff. But you may have to rely on your defense. And so keeping that in the back of your mind, knowing that they had that performance against the number one offense in the country, if they're still there, that makes you feel pretty good about what this defense can do as far as carrying the day going forward. Correct. Then last week, and I was telling you this in the pre-show, this might be their most impressive game in a loss. They lost 33-31 at Mizzou, who is 9-2. Man, they just had to get a 4th-and-17 stop, and they wet the bed. So they let them drive down. And then the thing was, like, not only did they get the 4th-and-17, then they just kept chunk play after chunk play after chunk play and put the this guy, I love his name, the thicker kicker from Missouri, who I think hit like a 60-yarder earlier this season. Yeah. He goes in and knocks them off. So they thought they had it, and then Missouri snatched it away from them.
Yep.
And now this was the game where you saw Graham Mertz get injured.
Yep.
Of course, you know, when we talk about Graham Mertz, you talk about Jordan Travis, obviously prayers and well wishes to both of those guys to get healthy. This is never how you want to see someone's career end. But that's where you insert Max Brown at quarterback. And they did put up 10 points in that game. I think it was about 2.5 quarters. They were already up. Maybe it was the third quarter they went. I'm not 100% sure. I forget what it was. But they had already scored 21 of their 31 points. So obviously you don't expect a freshman quarterback to come in cold and just light things up. But it's not like he did come in and light things up. And so that's going to lead us into our next segment here, which is going to be the offense or Florida State's defense versus Florida's offense. We're going to talk about that. But, Michael, before we get into that, I want to bring you a quick word from today's sponsor. And this is going to be an important one because, you know, this is fun. It's the last game of the season. Next week is the ACC Championship in Charlotte. And most of you guys know I live in the Charlotte area. It's supposed to be in the 30s this weekend, guys. It was literally hailing outside. I don't know where this came from.
Man.
It was hailing outside earlier, so you don't know what kind of weather you're going to get in Charlotte. So if you are planning on coming up here, you might want to go over there and you might want to grab a short sleeve shirt and you might want to get a hoodie and you might want to get some shoes and you might want to get some flip flops because you don't know what's going to happen next Saturday with this weather. But go check out the great selection of licensed FSU apparel they have at Alumni Hall. Thank you so much for those guys sponsoring this show. And you can get it at a great price with code SPEAR, 10% off online or in-store, 1817 Thomasville Road, or online at alumnihall.com, code SPEAR. So thank you guys for supporting them who supports us. Now, Michael, let's talk about this Florida State defense against the Florida offense, because last week you'd have been like, okay, this is really where the battle is going to be, because you know Florida is got a pretty poor defense, but their offense has actually been pretty respectable. Then you lose Graham Mertz, which I think that, you know, that's obviously going to change things. So let's first start by just looking at some numbers here when you compare the two. So FSU defense versus UF offense. Now, scoring defense for Florida State, you're giving up on average 16.9 points per game, which is 12th in the country. Florida is scoring on average 29.6 points per game, which is 51st in the country. And I do have a note here that when you talk about what they do against Power 5 teams, because you know they had the 0-10 FCS team, that number is 28.3 against Power 5 teams. Now, talking about your passing defense for Florida State, they've been good this year, 184 yards a game, top 15 in the country here. Passing offense for Florida is putting up 275 yards a game, 29th in the country. That is, of course, going to change without Graham Mertz. The backup doesn't really look like a passing type of quarterback. He's more of a dual threat guy, so we don't know if they're going to be able to hold up to that number. Your rushing defense for Florida State is giving up 140 a game, 45th in the country. Your rushing offense for Florida is putting up about 150 yards per game, 78th in the country. I mean, you're pretty much identical here, you know, what you give up and what they put up. Third downs, it's funny, everybody, like during the Boston College game, man, everybody was ready to just pack Fuller up and send him packing because we could not get a stop on third down. And here we are a few weeks later. Not third only is country. Fuller up for our Broyles Award, but third in the country in third downs, allowing only 26.9% of conversions. Yeah. So shout out to the defense for putting up those great numbers. It's not been great on third down for Florida. 36% conversions, 95th in the country. Now, they are pretty good in the red zone here. They scored 91.1% of the time, which is 19th. And I do have noted that they score 68.9% touchdowns. So they do get more touchdowns than field goals. So, you know, if you let them get into the red zone, they could score. But again, this all changes with the quarterback change.
Right.
And Florida State has had a good red zone defense. They are tied for 16th in the country. So that is where we sit with talking about the FSU defense versus this offense. But of course, like we said, man, everything's going to change, because when I went back and looked at the numbers, I was the first one to kind of trash Mertz in the offseason. He's had a good season, like for what you expected from a guy from Wisconsin who was not really a big passer in that kind of run first offense. That's what Napier likes to do. That's their strength. He's had a pretty good year. So can they move forward with a guy who just doesn't have any experience?
Right. Well, I mean, if you go back to the two drives that he was in, the first drive was a 16 play drive. They ran the, it was a 10 play drive. They ran the ball 7 of 10 times. He had two passes in that drive. One was for 27 yards and the other was for 5 yards. Then in the next play, on the next drive, he came out. It was an 8 play drive and they ran the ball. I think it was six times. They ran the ball 6 times in that drive. So you automatically know that whatever they're going to scheme up against Florida State, you know, they're going to have some passes in there for him, but they're going to rely on their running game. That is what they were relying on, even with Graham Mertz in the game.
Right.
Now with Graham Mertz out of the game, you most definitely be assured that they're going to look at what Florida State has given up in the run, and they're going to say, That's our best bet. We're going to run. We're going to set up the play action. There'll probably be some RPOs there because Max Brown can run. He does have wheels. He's more of a straight line runner than anything. He's not like a juky out of your shoes kind of thing, but he is a straight line runner, and they're going to run that ball. They're going to try to throw behind the linebackers, suck the linebackers up, try to get the ball behind the linebackers and see what they can do there. Obviously with Ricky, the Parcells there, they're going to move him Pearsall. They're going to move him around. You know, he's going to be out wide at the Y spot, and then he's probably going to be a lot in the slot spot. So it's going to be really dependent on, you know, hopefully we get, you know, Ricardo Green's back. You know, he practiced today, so hopefully he's back, or probably Jerrion Jones or Azaria Thomas. One of them is going to be on him. And so it's going to be indicative that we are able to, we probably won't be able to shut him down. I mean, he had two touchdowns against Florida State last season early in that game. But at least limit his ability to get those catches and then make it hard for them. I think I told you this in pre-show. My thing would be, if I'm Adam Fuller, I'm going to sell out against the run. I'm not talking about, you know, zero cover, zero blitzes, all like that stuff, and leaving your wide receivers or leaving your corners all out in the island the whole time. What I'm saying is you're going to play press man. You're going to roll a safety down in that box. You're going to make sure there's at the very least 7 to 8 guys in that box. You're going to have a safety high, and you're just going to say, I dare you to throw it over us. I dare you to try to hit the big shots. We're going to play tight man. We're going to force you to throw the ball. If you try to run at us, we're going to stuff the run. And I imagine that, and this would probably be something we talk about on the offensive side with Florida State, is I imagine that Florida is going to try to run some of that running back screen game, or the wide receiver screen game out wide, where they try to get the linemen out. I think another thing I told you real quick is, you know, one of the things that this is what you hate about playing these games like North Alabama and Southern Miss is because you end up putting stuff on tape. You didn't want other teams to have to try to explore it. Yep. And so with North Alabama running all those trick plays, it showed you that this defense is susceptible to eye candy of getting lost and not having their eyes in the right place. So I'd imagine that, I'm not saying that Florida is going to be North Alabama and run like 10 consecutive trick plays, but I would imagine that somewhere in that first and second drive for Florida, they're going to have something for Florida State's defense that's going to test their eyes and see where they're at, to see if they're going to actually pay attention and key in on. So I hope that Adam Fuller and all those guys are working on that this week for practice.
I think you're right, because that's something we mentioned after in the last show, was that you put some things on tape. And this is another game, when you talk about North Alabama last week and Florida this week, they just have nothing to lose. So why would you not throw the bag at them? I mean, why would this could potentially be your last game of the season? So why not empty the bag? Like, if I'm Napier, I'm onside kicking every time. I'm probably going for it on fourth down every time I'm across the 50, because what else do you have to lose?
Right.
But
right.
Yeah, man, I think it's going to be interesting. I think you could see some things like last year when they had AR, kind of that more dual threat guy, where they used Max Brown in that way. Cause I'm going to be honest, man. I went back and I watched when he came into the Missouri game, and he's not a bad player. Like, he's got some wheels. He's, like you said, he's not a real shifty guy. I kind of equated him more to like the Kyron Jones type of runner that you saw with Virginia Tech.
Right.
You know, just more of like a bigger guy. He's 6'2", 220. He is a freshman, and he's not a real shifty guy, but he's more of a design type of runner. Former 3-star from Oklahoma, number 96 quarterback in the 2022 class. He only had 4 offers now, from Florida, Central Michigan, Temple, and Washington. He's played in 5 games so far this season, and one of those you have McNeese, Vandy, South Carolina, Arkansas, Mizzou. Mizzou obviously being the best game the only game he really played in that meant anything. But he only attempted a pass in 3 games, so it's just the experience is not there.
Right.
Like I say, he's pretty decent on film, good runner, pretty decent arm there. One of the things that I'm going to be watching for in this one, in Missouri, they had multiple mistakes on just trying to hand the ball off. Like, he wasn't sure where to go. They fumbled one of the handoffs. The other one, he had to like almost jump 5 yards to like throw the ball in the guy's lap because they weren't on the same page. So those little mistakes. Now, granted, we saw Tate go the wrong way on a couple handoffs in FSU game too. So we're not immune from that either, but you could start to see those freshman mistakes stack up. And when you talk about what he did against Missouri, he was 10 of 12, 83.3% completion ratio. So that's pretty good. 106 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. And, you know, we talk about Pearsall. Now, he did score on a run from the receiver position. So they're going to use him a lot in this game.
Oh, yeah.
One of the interesting things here, now, he did have 4 rushing attempts. These are sack adjusted yards, 53 yards, 8.8 yards per attempt, and a fumble. Design run was 41 yards. Scramble was 12 yards. So you can see he's more of a design run guy.
Right.
But what's interesting to me in this one, Michael, is he has not really had to throw the ball under pressure so far this season. Now, granted, he hasn't thrown the ball a lot at all this season, but right. he's been kept clean on 81.3% of his dropbacks, only three pressures, and that resulted in one sack and two scrambles. So he has not really had to throw the ball under pressure. No. So if Florida State can get, you know, like you said, if you can load the box, challenge him to throw the ball, and you can get some pressure on him as a freshman, you might be able to rattle him. Because, man, I'm going to be honest, like, I didn't even know who this guy was. Like, when they brought him in, I was like, who is Max Brown? I mean, we know they had Jack Miller III, who played in the bowl game. Yeah, and he played in the bowl game for them against Oregon State when they you know, were kicking field goals down by 30 points.
Right.
In just an embarrassing fashion. And then, you know, they had the other quarterback who I don't think is allowed to play in school zones, so I don't even think he's on the team anymore. So, you know, it's ways. It's the things they do in Gainesville. You know, that's
things knows. They do in Gainesville.
There might be another 30 for 30 on this one day. You know, you just – whatever. So, but moving on. So, yeah, man, I just think, like, this is – it's just I probably shouldn't have went there, but, I, you know, hey,
it's all good.
It's all fair in rivalry week. But
exactly.
Yeah, so I just look at when you talk about the receivers, they have two good guys that you need to know about. Yeah. Obviously, you know, Pearsall is their guy. He is their senior.
Yep.
Clear number one, 64 receptions, 948 yards, only four touchdowns on the season, which is a little weird. 123 of those yards came against McNeese. He has not caught multiple touchdowns. This is something that stood out to me. He has not caught multiple touchdowns in any games.
Wow.
Now, he does have 300-yard-plus games. They all came against pretty bad passing defenses, but he did have 97 yards against UGA. He has a pretty good catch rate at 74.4%, but only a 44% contested catch rate. Now, he's legit. Like, I know people like to poo-poo on each other's players when it's a rivalry game.
Right.
Pearsall's legit. Like, he's good, but I'm not going to say that he is elite, but he is a really good college receiver. So that's going to be a guy to watch out for. And then Eugene Wilson, who's a freshman, he's put up 58 receptions, 502 yards in only nine games, six touchdowns. He does lead them in touchdowns.
Right.
He only had 23 yards versus Mizzou. So now you start to wonder, like, with these guys, is he going – now, he's got a really impressive 86% catch rate.
Yeah.
But are they going to be able to take advantage of these two guys with the backup quarterback? And no other receiver on Florida's roster has over 300 yards.
Nope.
They do have a freshman tight end that does have four touchdowns. But, man, that's like
– that's in the red zone, though.
You don't have a dynamic receiving core outside of two guys. And then – now you take away Mertz. So it's almost like if you can bracket coverage on Pearsall, you might be relying on a freshman and a running game to beat Florida State in this one.
I mean, so you're looking at Pearsall. He's got 64 catches. You're looking at Eugene Wilson. He's got 58. The next closest to him is the freshman tight end at 26, right? Yeah. At 26. And most of those catches, his longest, that freshman tight end's longest of the season is 25 yards. So his most of his touchdowns are coming in the red zone. Then check. The running back, okay, so you look at Johnson Jr., ETN kid, right? So you're looking at them. They have combined 48 catches together, right? But ETN is like your starter. He only got 18 catches. So really, you know when Johnson's coming into the game, you know, okay, they're probably – he's probably an option on this play, whereas ETN is not as much of an option that they're going to be throwing to. I would imagine – now, this is just speculation. This is my imagination, is that there's going to be a lot of shorter throws, remember, to set up the deeper throws. They're going to run, and then they'll probably use in the running game, you know, the little flat throw, the little the RPO throw to the flats, the RPO throw to the slant to suck down the linebackers, to suck down the safety, so that then they can try to get something over top. And again, if you bracket, or not even just bracket, like if you just have your best corner on Pearsall, even when now he's going to move all around. So again, the eye candy, like I said, I know I believe Florida's going to try to use a lot of this. And when you go back and watch them, even with Graham Mertz into at starter quarterback, they move Pearsall around. I mean, he's changing positions. He's motioning all the time. So they're going to try to move him around. They're going to try to put him on the best matchup they think is possible, which means they're probably going to try to get him either on a safety or on a linebacker in coverage. And so Florida State has to be wise to that and make sure that if he ends up on a safety, if he ends up on a linebacker, especially on a linebacker, that they have bracket coverage, that they have a safety over top of him so that they make sure he doesn't get behind the defense of that. You're going to give up some passes to him. I imagine that you're going to give up, you know, five or six passes that you're just like frustrated with, but you just got to make sure that those passes aren't, you know, touchdowns. They aren't deep balls. They're five yards, 10 yards at most, yep. 15 yards. And you got to make sure that you don't get, you don't give up those pass more than the fair share of them for the game, because that's how they can beat you. That if they run the ball on you, which then requires you to come down more on them, and then they're beating you up top. What you want to do is already be down, force them to throw the ball, and then play great back end coverage on those wide receivers.
Yeah, and I do think it's going to be huge. We don't know yet. Now, you told me in the pre-show that he was at practice, not in a green jersey. Yep. But if you get Renardo Green,
yep.
If you get him back, he's been pretty shut down all year. Now, you know, hopefully he's healthy. Hopefully that's not something that factors into this. But again, we really like Azaria. Fentrell Cypress has held his own this year. We've seen a lot of teams pick on him, and he has risen
to the occasion. Yep.
Right. So you got a plethora of guys, but if you can get your best guy back, I feel like that's going to really help you out. Yeah. And I will admit they do have a run game. They do have two good running backs. When you talk about Trevor Etienne, and this is crazy. Like when you hear some of these, when you look at these numbers, I had to like refresh the page a few times just to make sure I wasn't kind of tripping here. So Etienne has 710 yards. Johnson has 710 yards. One averages 5.87 a carry. One averages 5.3. One has 8 touchdowns. One has 4. So Etienne has 23 runs of 10 plus. Johnson has 22 runs of 10 plus. Etienne has 34 missed tackles forced. Johnson has 30. So you basically, there's no drop off from 1 to 2.
Right.
So you have two really good backs. Now, we knew that coming into the year. They were good last year. They've been good this year. That is their strength. Something that I talked about even as far back as the preseason magazine, I hesitated to want to give Miami credit for anything, but I thought they did good in the portal with their offensive line. Florida was the opposite story. I thought the out, because, you know, they had, I think they had like 30 players depart the roster last year. Yeah. And so what left was some all SEC guys, some transfers that he brought over from Louisiana, and you replaced it with guys I didn't feel were as talented. So is this offensive line going to be a little bit of a hamstring for them? Because when you look at the sack numbers, you're talking about sacks allowed by Florida, 33 so far, around 3 a game, tied for 112th. So again, when you talk about an offensive line that's not been great, a quarterback who has not had to face pressure yet, and a defense in Florida State that they've not always been great at getting the sack numbers, but they can create some pressure now. So they are tied for 14th in sacks at around 2.91 a game. So they're giving up 3, you're getting about 3. So you would hope, if you can get a few sacks to rattle the quarterback, then you feel good about what you can do if you can just keep, like you said, keep them from hitting them over the top. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Pearsall is going to get completely shut down, because they're going to run the ball from the receiver position. They're going to throw it around. He's going to get some, but you just have to limit that. You cannot let him go off against you.
Correct.
And if you do that, man, I know the run defense has kind of been our weakness, but it's different when you don't have like a really legit pass threat to look out for. And then you also have a mobile quarterback in this one that does make you a little bit nervous, but Florida State has kind of gotten better when you talk about drones and what they did against Schrader and going down the line. They've adjusted and they've done well against that. So I feel good about what Florida State should be able to do on defense against this offense, which is their strength, but that was before they lost Mertz. So I feel good about what they should be able to do in this one as long as they win the line of scrimmage. That's going to be huge in this game.
Yes, sir. I absolutely agree. I really see this defense really rising up and shutting down this offense. I mean, shutting down for the most part. You know, I think they're going to score, but I don't think they'll score much. Some field goals, maybe a touchdown there. But I really see this defense rising up, and I see this defense actually going to the means of their stats. Like, you're going to actually see this actually take advantage of. So, yeah, I have all confidence in this defense.
And if you can get it to like a Charlotte type of game where maybe they move the ball a little bit, but they have to settle for field goals a lot.
Right.
You're hoping that they're not going to beat you with 3 points. Now, we don't know what Florida State's offense is going to do, but we're thinking that it's you know, it might take a little bit to settle in, but we think it's going to be successful. So that actually brings us to flipping over now to the FSU offense versus the UF defense. And this is the matchup that makes your mouth water a little bit here. Mm. So when you're talking about your scoring offense for Florida State, 40.1 points per game, seventh in the country, scoring defense for Florida, 27.9 points per game allowed, 88th in the country. Passing defense for Florida State, 290 yards a game, 17th in the country. Of course, we know that's going to potentially change with the quarterback. I mean, we feel like Tate's a really good thrower of the ball. They're giving up 235 yards a game, which is 86th in the country. And what I like about this, Michael, as before we read off the rest of the stats, is I like that you're bringing Tate in after getting a game against a not great FCS team. Correct. Where he got a little couple snaps to get in rhythm and get some confidence. But now you're going to bring him in. It's not like he's going to have his first real game against Clemson's defense or something like that. You have a defense that sucks at stopping the pass. So you would hope that he can find some rhythm there. Now, rushing, this is also something that's going to be big. And this kind of funny. This was another one I had to refresh to make sure that this wasn't a mistake. Florida State rushes for, on average, 162 yards a game, 63rd in the country. Florida gives up 162 yards a game, 89th in the country. So also hoping that if Florida State can run the ball, if they can hit that mark, that 160 to 180, maybe 200 yards on the ground, you're going to take some pressure off of Tate, and that's going to be big for getting him going as well. Now, when you talk about third downs here, Florida's pretty good at third down defense. It's like kind of the only thing they're really good at. 47th in the country, and then Florida State is middle of the road, 48th on third downs, 41.1% conversion. Yeah. So that's a pretty dead even matchup there.
Yeah.
Red zone is a different story. Florida State is scoring on 91.3% of trips to the red zone, which is tied for 17th. And I do have the note in here that Florida State is scoring 67.4% touchdowns, so it's a majority of touchdowns there. Now, the red zone defense for Florida has been atrocious. They are allowing scores on 89.2% of trips down there, 111th in the country. So I feel like this is actually a pretty good matchup for Florida State when you talk about bringing in a backup quarterback to face a defense that's been struggling. You feel like this is going to be good for Tate, you know, if you can get him to settle in early. And you know, we talked in a pre-show about going back and watching film and things like that. I went back and watched last year's game against Louisville because I wanted to see, like, let me refresh my mind on what Tate did against the Power 5 defense. I know he did. He made some absolute dime, like, NFL-type throws in that North Alabama game, but it's North Alabama. You still were on target, but, like, let's see what you do against a good defense. Now, here's the thing that worries me about Tate, and this is what you talked about in the last show, about you got to get him in rhythm. You got to give him some of the short things to get him started, because in that Louisville game, he started 1-of-3 for -6 yards and an interception. That's about as bad of a start as you can get, and the interception was pretty ugly. After that, he went 5-of-8 for 109 yards and 2 touchdowns, and he was under pressure 51.7% of the time. Yeah. They came after him in that game.
They blitzed the heck out of him.
They did, and 63.7% of his passes were for 10-plus yards, so he would throw it down the field. And the thing about it, man, when you go back and watch that game, and the thing that's been so impressive with Tate when you watch him, now, of course, like we said, his biggest knock is that he has to be able to make the decisions in the moment. He has to avoid the WTF moments.
Yes.
But when you watch him throw the ball, and this is what we talked about on the last show, it's not a knock on Jordan. We think Tate could be potentially, if he gets in rhythm, a better thrower of the ball. Yeah. But, man, we talked about this. Like, when you watch him throw the ball to these receivers, I could be a receiver for Florida State, because all you have to do is just put your hands in front of you and the ball hits the hand. Yeah. I mean, Johnny's running, like, in stride on the one play against Louisville. And I mean, it just, like, all he did is just stick his hands out, and the ball just fell in his hands and
dropped right in.
Right. And then the back corner throw for the touchdown over Jarvis Burnt Toast Brownlee. Like, like, that was a beautiful, beautiful throw. And so, like, man, I'm excited to see what Tate can do when you're talking about a defense that is almost 90th in pass defense. I think he's got a potential to light him up here.
Yeah, oh, I agree. And here's the thing: like, if you go back to watch, Tate Rodemaker, when he came in 2020 and he had to start against Jacksonville State, it was literally the worst. I mean, the boy only, you know, gosh, they didn't even have time to put in an offense. They were putting in offense via Zoom. They were doing workouts via Zoom. So he comes into the game and he has a terrible game, and they have to bring Jordan in to win that game for him, right? So then you come back the next year, 2022 was the next time he got an opportunity, was against Louisville. He literally comes in the game after Jordan gets hurt again, and he goes 1 for 3 and he throws a pick, right? So you're like, okay, this is it. This guy's done. I remember I was on a Delta flight flying across the country, and I was just thinking, oh, this is over. Like, we're going to be 3-1, I think it was at the time, or we were going to go to 3-1. Like, oh, Tate, he's going to transfer out good because this kid can't play.
Right.
And then, of course, he leads them to victory, and you're like, oh, okay, Tate. Okay. Yeah. And so what I like about this opportunity is it's unfortunate that it had to come in, you know, an injury to Jordan. But he got to play basically 3 whole quarters against an FCS team. But he got to work out some of those little weird kink thingies that you need to work out when you play your first game. Right. Yep. He got to work some of that out. He got to make throws. Yes, he turned the wrong way on a handoff there deep in the ends on their side of the field. But he recovered. You know, he scrambled. He made some incredible throws. That throw to Keon was just a beauty. I mean, he was putting the balls on him. What I also love about it is that this week those receivers get to get used to getting the ball from Tate, because Tate will put it on you. I mean, he's got a cannon. And when you have a gunslinger cannon mentality, you're going to try to take some chances. That's why I told you in the last show. And that's why it's so important. I think that Mike Norvell gives him some easy, readable throws, some throws to the flats, some RPOs where it's easy. If the linebackers come down, throw it. If they don't come down, hand it off. Get him into that rhythm of thinking, okay, my job is not to go win this game. My job is to, I know quarterbacks hate this, but my job is just to manage the game and let my skill players around me win this game. That's your job. My job is to manage the game and get the ball to them when I'm told to get the ball to them. If he can do that, which I believe he can, if he can do that, man, this offense. And another point of this is, you know, Florida State's been struggling on the offensive line. They've been injured. The offensive line hasn't been what we had hoped to be. But, man, if there's a get-right game for the offensive line, it is this game. Yes, yeah. Florida has some athletes on defense, for sure. We can't dismiss that. But they given up 162 yards running. That's their average. But we saw what Jaden Daniels did to them.
And Kentucky. Yeah, and all these other teams.
And all these other teams.
They got them, you know, they got a lot of beef up front. They got, two guys, I think, that are pushing 400.
Number 21? My gosh.
Right, but, you know, Desmond Watson and the other guy, the transfer they brought in. So they got some beef up front, but they're not a very athletic front. Right. Exactly. And so I think that's something that Florida State should be able to take an advantage of. We know they do run, a multiple defense. So you might see 3-down linemen, you might see 4-down linemen, depending on what looks again. That was the whole, like, thing that the guy went, and we run.
And we're multiple in the back and multiple in the front. Like,
I don't even think he knew what he was saying. But that's the thing, man, is when you talk about what Florida State should be able to do in this one, and you talk about Tate, you look back at the games that he's had, and, man, I don't care, like, if you've been here 20 years or 2 minutes.
Right.
If you get inserted into a game in front of a sold-out crowd when you probably expected to play, but you maybe weren't ready to play, or even in the Louisville game, I mean, nerves are a thing, man. Like, Jordan still talked about how he gets nervous at times. Yep. So that's the thing with Tate. Like, you see the mistakes kind of early, but then when you see him get settled in, he gets a little bit of confidence. After he threw that touchdown to Johnny in the Louisville game, I was watching. They were showing the sideline. He's over there with the headset on, smiling and laughing. Yeah. So, like, you could tell he was starting to feel it. The other thing, too, is, like, man, he's an athlete. And we talked about this in the last show, but something that I saw on social media that came out. Now, of course, this could have just been a one-time deal. You know, you don't know if this was an everyday thing, but – man, he was clocked in practice at, I think it was 21.7 miles an hour.
I saw that.
Over a mile an hour faster than Jordan, because he's got that stride. So, like, he broke off a run in the Louisville game.
The difference between him and Jordan, and I'm not saying he's as fast as Jordan. Like you said, that could have been a one-off deal. The difference, though, is straight line speed. If he gets out in the open and he's got an open thing to run, he's fast. That's the thing. Jordan is fast and twitchy. Like, Jordan can
miss. He can make you miss in a phone booth.
Exactly. He can make you miss in a phone booth. Whereas Tate can make you miss in a Walmart, right? Tate needs a Walmart. Jordan needs a phone booth. But still, he's fast. And so if I do think, and Mike Norvell has said this, he said it on the College Football Playoff show. He said it on another interview he did earlier in the week, but he even said it after today's practice. He's like, what people forget is that he's athletic. So that's Mike Norvell's way of telling you they're going to run him. They're going
to
run
him. I think so too. And I think he's going to be able to move the pocket to avoid pressure, because I think Florida will try and get to him early to try and rattle him. But, you know, if they can get the crowd going and things like that. But yeah, man, I think they're going to use his legs. Now, I do think they're going to be mildly cautious, because you know now your quarterback, your backup situation is a break glass in case of emergency. And that's not that. It's not that, you know, Brock Glenn is not talented, but no, he had an injury to his hand, so he didn't get to practice a whole lot this year. Yeah. So you'd rather not go to him, but I do think they're going to run him, because I think that's going to open up a part of the offense, which, again, it's not a knock on Jordan. We just know he didn't run the ball a lot this year.
Right.
It was like because he's been banged up a lot. But if you have Tate, who's healthy and he can go out there and run the ball, it might open some things up on your offense. And I think that you can get some shots. If, you know, like you said, I think this may be a game where you start to see Johnny takes your deep shots, and then you let Keon work underneath. And like, Florida's linebackers are not the greatest group. So I think
they're actually hot garbage. I'm just, I normally try to give the team, the opponent, as much credit as possible, because you know, I don't like the bad juju. I'm just telling you, they are hot garbage.
And I think this is a game where your linebackers can come into play, or not your linebackers, but your tight ends can come into play in this one. Because we've seen, and the funny thing is, you know, Jaheim Bell was his teammate, you know, all the way back to middle school. And that's something that they talked about. So, and I think one thing that you bring up too, and that is a good point. When you talk about Tate, he hasn't played a lot at Florida State, but he's been around. He knows the system, and he played in Valdosta in high school. Like, that's a legit, that's a really hard.
14,000 people every Friday night.
They could probably beat Florida. Valdosta High School. So, like, you never know. I mean, but that's the thing, man, is he played in really tough competition in high school. He just hasn't done a whole lot at the college level, but you can see the potential is there with the athletic ability. Yeah. I think I looked up and he was like the number 25 pro style quarterback in when they took him. So I think that you're going to see some things out of Tate that might surprise some people. Like we said in the last show, it's not that I would much rather have Jordan and have Tate
for
at the backup 100% of the time. But there's a little bit of me that's excited to see what Tate can do in this offense when you talk about him having these guys, these weapons with a Johnny Wilson and a Keon Coleman and a Jaheim Bell and all these guys. Like, anybody with that – we talked about this with Ohio State. I think his name is Kyle McCord. I said last week that I didn't even know who his name was. It's not that he's good. He's got freaking Marvin Harrison Jr. to throw to. So now, if you talk about Tate, and I think that's – and we don't have time to really get into the rankings thing today, but that was something that even old Boo talked about in his thing. He said, you know, Florida State's got dudes across the field. It's just you got a different guy distributing the ball.
Right.
And if those guys can get open, it doesn't matter who's throwing it. As long as the ball gets there and they can make plays, I think Tate can do enough to go into the swamp.
Yes.
Like we said, as long as you can settle him in early, get him some confidence, get him in rhythm. Hopefully we can lean on the run game in this one. And if you can do that, man, I feel like Florida should have a tough day stopping all the different dimensions of this offense.
Yeah.
Because, like we said, the one thing that really makes Jordan elite was his running ability. That was on display last year against Florida, but he didn't run the ball a whole lot. So if you can do some certain things in this game, I think Florida State can have success on offense against a defense that has struggled all year long.
Right. Yeah, Florida's gonna bring pressure, right? He's going to bring some pressures that hopefully the scout defense is giving Tate a view of, like, you know, just to be able to say, okay, I got to make these checks at the line. I always think this is where a backup quarterback runs into trouble. It's because they're not used to having to go up to the line in a pressure situation and make a check to make sure that the offensive line picks up the right blitzer, make sure the wide receivers know if this is run or pass and who they're blocking and what scheme they're running. Right. Like, they're not used to doing that. They might know the plays. They might know where to get the ball to, but they're not doing all those things. So this is where, and I also saw today that Maurice Smith was out to practice. He didn't have a so you need him. You're going to need him in the trenches there to be able to make those check calls for you. And again, if Mike Norvell can set Tate up with some easy throws early on, if the offensive line can block just give our running backs just a little bit of a hole there. You know, very few tackles for loss. You know, Trey Benson, Toa Fili, Keziah Holmes, Rodney Hill. Man, if they can actually do something in the run game, and then, you know, you get Keon underneath, you get Keon on the side, you get Johnny up top, you get Johnny with the back end throws, all those different things that Tate can do, and you just slowly get there, man, it'll be an avalanche is what I believe. I just believe this is just going to be an avalanche. We're going to see the matriculation of Tate Rodemaker grow into next year's starting quarterback starting this game.
Right, and I think a couple of points I want to touch on before we get into the keys to the game and a wrap-up here. I think one, I will first mention that I heard mentioned this week that also Robert Scott should be available.
What I heard too.
He was ready to go for the North Alabama game, but they didn't feel like they needed him, so they wanted to give him an extra week. So that could be an extra option there on your offensive line. I think also when you talk about Tate getting a week as the starting quarterback to prepare, you know, you're splitting reps when you're not the starter with the one. So they still have to get their timing right. And that's something that'll be big from the last game to this game, just getting on the same page as those receivers. And that's going to help too. But I think the one thing that stood out to me when you look at the Louisville game, 90% of the reason that they had success in that game was they had a mismatch and a defensive coordinator who was not smart enough to give safety help over the top against Johnny.
Correct.
But what's more important than how it happened was that Tate was able to take advantage of the fact that it did happen.
Recognized it. Yep.
Right. So, like, if you get a mismatch in this game, if they recognize early on someone can't cover Johnny or someone can't cover Keon,
Tate
got a good enough arm to take advantage of that. So it's not like you're going to have to have him throw people open. Like, if you get that mismatch, Tate's a good enough passer, if you keep him upright, to be able to take advantage of that. So, yeah, man, I really do think that if they can settle him in early and we can avoid, I would not be shocked to see Tate throw a pick in this game. It just, you know, things happen. But as long as you overcome that, as long as you stay poised and as long as he starts to get in rhythm, don't let Tate get in rhythm now. Right. You know what I mean? Like, don't let him get some confidence. Don't let him get in rhythm. Don't let him get that mismatch exposed like they did in the Louisville game. Florida might be in trouble. So we'll have to see, man. But I'm excited to see what they can do. Like I said, I got this weird gut feeling that, like, they're just going to circle the wagons and that Tate is going to rise up to the occasion. I'm not saying he's going to be perfect. There could be some mistakes in there. It's part of the backup quarterback life coming into a situation maybe you weren't planning on.
Yeah.
But I think he's plenty capable of running this offense. And like you said, he's been around for a while. So when you talk about going up the line and making checks, he may not get the freedom to do what Jordan Travis did.
Right.
As far as basically just running, you know, whatever he sees.
Probably have to look to the sideline. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But they're going to be confident in letting him relay what he sees and feed back to them because he does have years in this offense. He knows what he's looking at. And you'll see a lot of the screen game and stuff like that we saw against North Alabama that they can get some guys in space and just let him work and to get him in rhythm. So yeah, man, I think the offense could have a good day in this one. So let's get into our keys to the game and our score prediction here. So, Michael, for me, I'll do my keys and then I'll let you do yours, and then we'll trade score predictions here. So, obviously, I think with this one, you want to force Florida to be one-dimensional. You want to make them try to have to pass to beat you with a guy who just doesn't have a whole lot of passing experience with a receiver core that really only has two standout guys. You've obviously seen better quarterbacks and better receiving cores through LSU and things like that throughout the year. So, I don't think you're going to be, you know, scared of what you're seeing from them. Now, they may break off some plays or whatnot. And so I think if you can limit them in the run game, if you can try and just slow that down and make them have to pass, and if you can jump out to a hot start, that's another little key for me is if you can avoid the slow start, say Florida State jumps out to a 14-0 lead or something like that, the crowd's going to get quiet.
Yep.
And then they're going to have to start throwing the ball to get back into game. And that's what you want. And then for me, the biggest key of the game is just going to be blocking it up front. Because like we talked about, Tate is a guy that he progresses through his reads, maybe a little deeper into the reads than Jordan did, and a little bit slower because he just doesn't have the experience.
Right.
But he's not scared to stand in there and deliver it. He keeps his eyes downfield. So if you can keep him upright, and if you get Maurice Smith back, and you get Robert Scott back, that's going to help there too.
Yes.
But he still did good under pressure in the Louisville game. But if you can just avoid like some maybe a bad sack where you get his head on the swivel and he's looking around and worrying about seeing things or whatnot, man, I think that's going to be enough for them to go in there, quiet the crowd, and win in the swamp.
Yeah, man, I absolutely agree with those keys of the game. I think to add to that, I think, you know, here's the deal. those Florida fans are going to be screaming at somebody. They're either going to be screaming at Florida State or they're going to be screaming at the Gators. You want them screaming at the Gators, right?
Yeah, because they booed Felipe Franks a few years ago,
too. They sure did. They sure did.
They are not scared of poo on their own people.
They will boo Billy Taggart out of that stadium if they lose on Saturday. And so that's what you want them to do. You want them to have to scream at their own team. How do you do that? Well, you bring Tate in on offense and you give him easy throws, easy reads right up front. Settle him down. He's a gunslinger, and gunslingers want to sling that ball. So make sure you just give him some easy throws out to the flats, some RPOs, easy reads. Get his juices to slow down a little bit. Get his mind to slow down. Get his juices up so that later on in the game, when you're having him sling it 10 to 15 yards, 20 yards, 30 yards down the field, he's now making accurate throws like he got the like he was able to do in that North Alabama game. He's experienced, right? And so you know that probably with some checks on the line there that you're going to be making from the sidelines, he's going to be able to get you guys into the right play. Second key to the game, offensive line. If there is a game that you just blocked your butt off, run and pass, this would be it. This would be the game that Mike Norvell, like I just see in my head, Mike Norvell calling the counter, and we're just Trey Benson and Toll Feely and Rodney Hill and Keziah Holmes. They're just running roughshod on this Florida defense like LSU did, like Kentucky did.
Yep.
Come on, offensive line, block, 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 block. And then the last thing I'll say is this, going back to my top point, is either Florida fans will be screaming at FSU or they'll be screaming at their own team. Defense. We cannot get out to a slow start. We cannot give up 14 quick points. We cannot give up an easy touchdown. We cannot get buses assignments. Seriously, if we don't do that, if we get like a couple three and outs pretty quickly, first three drives, get a couple three and outs. Oh, my goodness. The avalanche starts. That's what you want.
Because you also have to think they have a freshman quarterback. So while you're talking about getting Tate in rhythm, if you can get them out of rhythm with their freshman quarterback and make him start seeing ghosts and things like that, that's when it can really start to avalanche, like you talked about. Yep. And this is going to be one of those games where you need the defense to really carry the day and let the offense find its footing. You just got to keep them. You got to keep them in. You can't, like you said, you can't get down 14-0 early or something like that and have guys start looking around at each other, which this is a veteran team. I don't think that, you know, they got a lot of leaders on this team. We talk about guys like Fabo and all those, you know, the guys that are upperclassmen versed in that. So I think they're going to hold it together. I don't think they're going to let their emotions get to them. But yeah, man, if you can stay in it and you don't let that crowd get going and you don't let them get a little bit of confidence, I think you can really start to see things spiral for Florida. And that's going to be big for Florida State to kind of jump out early, hang on, find your footing, let the defense carry the day. Don't make a whole lot of mistakes. Don't do the turnovers. Don't let any, you know, big special teams plays sway the game or anything like that. Right. Just play your game. Play your game. Play excited. Play up tempo with the rivalry. Play, you know, with your hair on fire, but don't let your emotions get to you. You do that, I think you got a good chance in this one. So I do think Florida State's going to go down there. I do think they're going to win. I do think they're going to make a little bit of a statement in this one. I think it's going to be – this is it's a two-game season right now. It's your audition. You know, they talked about in the playoff committee, the chairman.
Yep.
He talked about how Florida State, they got jumped because of what Washington did. It wasn't necessarily what injury, Florida State did, but they have two opportunities to prove themselves. And I think this is going to be a big one for Florida State. And I think it's a good matchup for you when you talk about breaking in a new quarterback against a team whose weakness is their defense. So while I'm not predicting a blowout type score, I do think Florida State does cover the spread. I think they go into the swamp and I think they get things. I think maybe it just doesn't get a huge spread because you're going to have to settle your offense in early. Right. Maybe they make some plays. I got Florida State winning this one 31-20.
Okay, that's good. 11-point spread. That's good. Jesse, let me just tell you, in 1979, and a 10-0 Florida State walked into the swamp against a 0-9-1, I believe, Florida team. They were 0-9. They had nothing to play for. And their only thing they had to play for was to ruin Florida State's season. Florida State walked out of that, out of the swamp. I think the score was 29-16 was the final score. Oh, no, I'm sorry. 26-17 was the final score. Okay. So they Florida State walked in and did that. it's about to happen again. Though this team is not 0-10 or 0-1 or whatever, Florida State is going into the Swamp and they're going to win. I said it on the What Now show. In order to go 4-0, you got to start 1-0. I am believing that this injury to Jordan Travis, prayers to him and his family, is going to galvanize this team. They're not playing for 13. They're playing with 13. They're finishing with 13. They're going to dominate this game. I fully believe it. I told you I've had this feeling all week long. It is going to be a coming out party for Tate Rodemaker and this whole team. I have the Seminoles walking into the Swamp and leaving that trash dump of a stadium 38-14.
Let's go. I would love to see that. That would just be like a nice Thanksgiving helping of humble pie to the Gators. Yes. Like, no bowl for you, no leftovers for you, no nothing. Your season's over. It's done. And I think you're right, man. I think they're going to rally with the Jordan situation. I think they see that they just got dropped to number 5 in the playoff rankings. And I know people talk about, we don't talk about, Mike Norvell said, you know, we don't talk about rankings, whatever. Everybody knows. You see it. Yep. They're on social media. Yep. They know. They've rallied around each other. You've seen a lot of the all we got, all we needs and things like that on social media. I think they're going to play inspired in this one. I would love 38-14. That would be an awesome way to end the season. You would move to 12-0, an undefeated regular season, and then you could turn your sights on Louisville. And yeah, man, I do think just the one thing I will say about this game, when you talk about looking down the road at the playoffs and things like that, I just think in this one, it's okay if it's tight early because you know you're breaking in a new quarterback. I just think you don't want this one. And it's a rivalry game, so anything can go, obviously. Right. But I think you kind of want to win this one. You don't want to be struggling in this one.
Right.
Louisville, a top 10 team in a neutral site game, that you just win. This one is a just win. But I think if you can not like play from behind and then come back and win against Florida, if you can go in there and you can pretty much keep them at bay the whole game, it's going to make a statement that Florida State can go out and win even with a change at quarterback. And so it's a huge one, man. Like you said, the path to 4-0 starts with 1-0, and it all starts this Saturday against Florida in the Swamp at 7 p.m. Sold out. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be fun. This is just always a fun game, man. This is one of the best rivalries in college football. There's going to be a lot of good games to watch that day. Of course, you got Ohio State, Michigan that we're all going to have to keep our eye on there.
Yep.
See who loses that game. But Michael, I'm just so excited for the Saturday. We were talking about it in the pre-show, man. I'm equally sad because, like, I know we still have the ACC title game. We still have whatever postseason awaits for us.
Right.
Man, this is it in the regular season.
It feels like it's gone so fast.
So fast. It came to a head really quick. But the season's not over. I mean, it's far from over. But it's crazy to think that we are in the final week of the regular season. But, man, what better way to cap off a special year?
Yep.
To beat Florida, to go 2-0 against your rivals, to make it a 2-game win streak over, you know, you beat both of them last year, beat both of them this year. That's 2-time state champion. I know people laugh at the state champion thing, but it does. It means it something in the state of Florida.
That's right.
This is also big for recruiting. You've seen Florida's class start to fall apart. So yeah, man, there's a lot. Like, you talk about the undefeated season, you talk about bowl eligibility for Florida, you talk about recruiting, you talk about all these things. There's a lot on the line
absolutely
in this game. There is a lot on the line in this game. So I'm just excited to see it go down,
Let's
man.
Go. Let's
I'm
go.
So excited. So yeah, guys, we will hopefully be able to catch you guys. Michael will be tied up, but I'm hopefully going to be able to do a post-game show for you guys after this one. But, you know, I'm going to be – I took the night off just to watch it because this is the one that you are not going to want to miss.
Absolutely.
I'm a little nervous, but I'm really excited. So you never know what you're going to get out of two backup quarterbacks. But, man, I like our guy better than I like their guy. So we're just going to roll with the Noles, man, and just enjoy this. And hopefully they go in there and smack Florida around a little bit. So, yeah, man, I'm super excited. So with that being said, guys, we're going to wrap it up here. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for your continued support. And as always, as we always end the show, go Noles.
Go Noles.
Beat them dang Gators.
Yes, sir.